americanloans.com.
Blog Talk Radio.
JDPower.com. Equal housing lender. Licensed in all 50 states. Nationwide mortgage licensing system number 3030.
I am Professor Nathaniel Burke from the University of Farmers, where agents' minds are cultivated like a plump butternut squash. And this is a pop quiz. True or false? Nearly 20% of American drivers are uninsured. If you answered true, you're correct. If you said false, you have way too much faith in your fellow man.
Chat with a Farmers Insurance agent to see how you can protect yourself with a personalized auto policy. Find your local agent at Farmers.com. We are insurance.
We are Farmers.
Coverage not available in all areas.
The opinions expressed on the following sponsored program are strictly those of its host, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of the station, its staff, management, or sponsors.
Good afternoon, and welcome to Defending Your Money with your host, Dan Ascani of Ascani Wealth Management. Ascani Wealth Management is located in the Golden Bear Plaza in North Palm Beach. Give Dan a call at 877-578-5788. That's toll-free, 877-578-5788. Or check out the website at www.ascaniwm.com. Dan Ascani is a registered investment advisor representative of Kovac Advisors and is a registered representative of Kovac Securities. Dan can help you with money management, security brokerage services, financial services including financial planning, preservation, estate protection, and much, much more. Over the next hour, Dan will share his wisdom on all of these subjects. Now, here's the host of Defending Your Money, Dan Ascani.
Welcome, everyone, to the Defending Your Money show, and you've probably heard this a lot the last couple of days. Happy New Year. This is the first show of the new year, and I hope you had a great holiday period, and you're ready to tackle the new year. Here we are, 2011. I say already, that's just the way it seems to me. Time's flying. Seems like I was just saying, here we are, 2010. All right, I'll get used to it. But here we are, Defending Your Money show, first of the year. This show, remember, is all about you, whether you're a consumer, an investor, or a business, defending, building, and preserving your wealth in this tough economy. And on this show, if you haven't heard us say this before, we aim to educate you on what's out there in the investment world, on what our models say about the markets, and drill down below the surface layer of basic news and information and look for additional clues, cut to the chase, find out the real trends that are going on, and look for opportunities. And that is the theme of the Defending Your Money show. Now, you can get us by going to defendingyourmoney.com in your browser. That is, punch in defendingyourmoney.com into your browser. That'll redirect you to my firm's website, and my firm is Ascani Wealth Management. We're located in North Palm Beach, Florida. Full-service wealth management, including discretionary account management, general securities brokerage. That means we can be your broker of record, or on a discretionary basis, we'll be your investment advisor if you have an account at a major firm like Fidelity, TD Ameritrade, or Pershing. You can add us on as your manager, and we can manage the account for you or become your broker of record and help you out, become part of your investment decision-making input. And if you don't have an account there and you still want to utilize their services, financial consulting, financial planning agreements, we can help you with estate planning and more. So just give us a call. Our number is 877-578-5788 or go to defendingyourmoney.com. All right, let's get to the markets. First day of the new year, first business day of the new year. Markets up sharply. In fact, it looked for a while there like it was going to be a really big up day. And the market faded at the end of the day, and the rally so far on fairly light volume still. I guess people still didn't come out of the woodwork yet. Volume has been light on these rallies, partly because of the holidays, but also partly because, well, there's not that many people playing the market right now. January 3rd, people still on vacation. Whatever the case may be, volume is still a little bit light. Nonetheless, market up between 0.8% on the Dow, and if you're looking at some of the broader averages like the Russell 2000, that's the small cap index, up 1.9%, over twice what the Dow was up. And the rally was pretty much global. Let's take a look at what sectors did well today, because there were perhaps some surprises in there that people may not have been expecting. For example, banking stocks have been strong, and they've been strong for the month of December. Bank stocks had one of the best months in, I don't know when, during December, and that rally continued today, about a 2.25% advance in the ETF, SPDR, KBW Bank ETF, symbol KBE. That's an exchange-traded fund, trades all day long on the exchange, and is linked to the performance of that KBW Bank Index, up 2.25%. But one of the ETFs that was up at least that much, in fact more, is the United States Natural Gas Fund, UNG. Now, that's an alternative ETF because it's linked to the performance of natural gas. But it's interesting because the whole energy sector has been performing well, but natural gas has been correcting for months and just came off the lowest point of the year in late October and then did nothing until today. High volume rally in UNG. Pretty interesting there from the natural gas fund. Also, globally, we had some good performance out of some of the country ETFs like iShares Hong Kong ETF. That symbol is EWH. Now, some of the country ETFs and some of the regional ETFs like Emerging Markets, EEM, went sideways since the election here in November. They went into a correction, then ended the year sideways. Now, blasting off to the upside, at least with respect to Hong Kong, up 2.3%. Looking at the Emerging Markets Index, EEM, that I said a few minutes ago, that was up 0.96%. That had gotten an early start rallying last week, though, still up today. And then as we go down the list, we see some generally good performance, again, from banking stocks, from some technology stocks. Home builders still strong. That ETF XHB up 1.5%, still pretty strong. That had been a laggard for months after the crash, bottoming in August, moving up off the lows, but still not exceeding the April highs of 2010 yet. Nonetheless, one of the strongest recently, especially during the month of December, when a lot of the laggards began to play catch-up, including banking and a home builder, building and construction stocks, and so forth. Transportations remain firm. The Dow Transportation ETF, IYT, up 1.25% in line with the market, and that looks like a new 52-week high there. And as you go down the list, we see more financials, more country ETFs like Malaysia. Then we get into dynamic leisure and entertainment ETFs. For example, PEJ, that had been going sideways for the month of December, now beginning to play catch-up here. And continuing on down the list, this is my list of some of the ETFs that I watch during the day to get an idea of how the sectors are participating. The retail ETF, same sideways pattern, up 8.87, that is, about 7/8%. As you go down the list, the performance gets a little worse for the day with some lagging. Now, one of the biggest laggards, of course, has been the inverse funds, which move down when the market moves up. But then when you look at also some of the commodity funds and precious metals, gold staged a correction today, not too big, down a few bucks an ounce, but that brought the gold ETF, GLD, down 0.5%. And some of the other ETFs, such as SGOL, now that's a physical Swiss gold ETF. Like GLD, it holds gold, but it's gold deliverable in Switzerland. Those were down about 0.5%, pretty consistent. But remember, gold is near, very close to all-time record highs, much farther along the way than the Dow, which is still a few thousand points from its record high. Gold, though, in the wake of the global economic crash and what the central bankers are doing to paper currency, gold strong, closing the year within an earshot of its all-time record high. Silver hitting $31 an ounce today, and then backing off just a little bit here. But nonetheless, precious metals, very small correction, nonetheless very close to their all-time record highs, at least with respect to gold. Now, silver's high is a 30-year high recently, not an all-time high. You might remember in 1980 when silver was around $50 an ounce before it peaked. That was during the period when the Hunt brothers were accused of cornering the market, so supposedly silver was squeezed higher than gold, relatively speaking, and it still has yet to make an all-time record high. In fact, still somewhere around $20 an ounce below its record high. Gold, though, easily into record high territory through much of 2010, backing off just a little bit today. Now, much of the play today in stocks and bonds, were on the economic news. The thinking recently has been that the economy is recovering. It's a tepid recovery, but it's recovering. And investors appear to think recently, as I've been saying on the Defending Your Money show, that there's enough of a recovery to bring interest rates up off of emergency low levels. That's sort of a phrase that the street began to use in the wake of the crash when the Federal Reserve dropped interest rates to zero and T-bill rates went to zero, even negative, believe it or not, sometimes in the wake of the crash as investors hid in the relative safety, the perceived safety of U.S. government treasuries. That all dropped rates to near zero, in fact, zero in some cases. So-called emergency levels. It was an emergency. The global economy collapsed. The Federal Reserve felt that it needed to drop rates to zero. And everything linked to the Federal Reserve-controlled rates were down also. Well, investors now apparently feeling that the recovery is enough to bring rates off of emergency low levels. Not Fed-controlled rates, though. That's a different story. Those are government-controlled, at least government-influenced. But Treasury rates have been rising. We'll cover this more after the break. This is Dan Ascani with the Defending Your Money Show. Don't go away. I'll be right back. Hi, I'm Dan Ascani, host of the Defending Your Money Show. Let's face it, today's economy is tough, and building wealth in a low interest rate environment with a roller coaster stock market is difficult. That's why I always say building your wealth begins with an accurate assessment of your investments and the risks you're taking. We use modern portfolio theory to assess the risk you're taking in your portfolio so we can help you have peace of mind knowing the level of risk or standard deviation in your investment portfolio. At my firm, Ascani Wealth Management in North Palm Beach, we'll analyze your portfolio with software to help quantify the risk. Then we'll make recommendations to adjust your investments to the level of risk you want to take. Call now, toll free at 877-578-5788. That's 877-578-5788 for your thorough, no-obligation portfolio review or submit your request on defendingyourmoney.com.
Dan Ascani is a registered investment advisor representative of Kovac Advisors Incorporated and a registered representative of Kovac Securities, member FINRA SIPC.
Hi, I'm Dan Ascani, host of the Defending Your Money show. Let's face it, today's economy is tough, and building wealth in a low interest rate environment with a roller coaster stock market is difficult. That's why I always say building your wealth begins with an accurate assessment of your investments and the risks you're taking. We use modern portfolio theory to assess the risk you're taking in your portfolio so we can help you have peace of mind knowing the level of risk or standard deviation in your investment portfolio. At my firm, Ascani Wealth Management in North Palm Beach, we'll analyze your portfolio with software to help quantify the risk. Then we'll make recommendations to adjust your investments to the level of risk you want to take. Call now, toll free at 877-578-5788. That's 877-578-5788 for your thorough, no-obligation portfolio review or submit your request on defendingyourmoney.com.
Dan Ascani is a registered investment advisor representative of Kovac Advisors Incorporated and a registered representative of Kovac Securities, member FINRA SIPC.
Dan Ascani, remember I'm here every weekday, 5 p.m. Eastern on AM 740 Money Talk Radio in South Florida. And if you miss that, it's replayed at 6:30 a.m. every weekday. So whether you're driving to or from work, tune us in. Also, you can get us on defendingyourmoney.com. We archive all the shows there and stream them live. So if you can't hear it, you're not in the area, you can't hear it on the radio, or you miss a show or want to catch up on what we've been saying, just punch in defendingyourmoney.com in your browser. Click on the radio icon when it redirects you to our firm's website. That's Ascani Wealth Management. And pick the show, sorted by date and topic. And today we're talking about the first business day of the year and the markets out of the gate to the upside with a big rally in stocks. Fading off its highs, though, looked like it was going to be a really big day. Market faded. The Dow only closed up 0.8%. But before this, during December, and even from about late November, maybe mid-November on, the market has been drifting up. Some people call it a melt-up, where there's really no fundamental news in any one particular day to cause one to think that it's time to buy stocks like there's no tomorrow, but the market has nonetheless been doing that, even over the holidays when volume was very light. The market just drifted up to 52-week highs, in fact, two-year highs, seemingly almost every day. And that trend continued today. Of course, we all know the market won't rally every day, and it won't stay in an uptrend without having an intervening correction. Now, if you look at any advance in any financial market over the years, stocks, bonds, precious metals, commodities, whatever, the multi-year advance consists of rallies, weeks or months in duration typically, and then corrections. And when you're dealing with this kind of environment now, and by this kind of environment, I mean the post-crash environment, people are wondering whether the market is even still in an uptrend. After all, the S&P 500 index peaked in January 2000. And then it peaked again near the same level, just above 1550 in October 2007, and is still well under that record, 1550, well under that level. In fact, if you look at the January 2000 stock prices when the markets peaked and launched this wild decade we've seen since then, and then you compare inflation-adjusted dollars, the constant dollar top is still 2000. Even though the Dow went to a new record high in October 2007, nearly 8 years later, before it crashed again, the constant dollar high factored in for the value of the dollar, the purchasing power of the dollar, still is 2000, January 2000, not 2007. So if you're looking to build wealth, one thing you have to consider, of course, is the purchasing power of the dollar. And if the investment markets, at least the stock market, has been unable for 11 years to reach a new inflation-adjusted high, then that investment, that asset class, in our view, should not be emphasized in your portfolio. I don't mean you should be out of stocks altogether. I mean that should not be the only, let alone even the primary asset class in your portfolio, at least for now. Now, one thing that has, of course, kept up with the purchasing power of the dollar and that has contributed to wealth-building efforts for those who are suited to hold it, and that is gold. We've talked about gold a lot on this show, Defending Your Money, and a lot in our research reports. Now, it's not for everyone, but a diversified portfolio that includes perhaps some of the securities, some of the ETFs that hold gold, silver, or are linked to a basket of commodities may serve a function for most people in helping with diversification. And there are some white papers, some research you can get on the subject. You don't have to believe us, although I'd like you to, and I'd like you to give me a call because we can help you out. We can help you make decisions and be part of your investment decision-making input. But there are some research materials on the subject of diversification, including what a basket of commodities does to a traditional stock and bond portfolio. And one of the key research reports was put out by Yale Wharton in a joint white paper in 2004. And they studied data from 1959 to 2004 and compared what an allocation of commodities, a basket of commodities, would do to that traditional stock and bond portfolio, and if so, in what proportion. And I drew several conclusions. And we can help direct you to that paper if you want to read it. Just give us a call, 877-578-5788. That's 877-578-5788. That's a white paper by Yale Wharton, written in 2004. And it was designed to blow away myths and fantasies about, well, the commodity markets and the investment markets. Because most people look at asset classes, stocks, bonds, and commodities, three different asset classes. They look at them as whether they're risky or not, and that's a good thing to do. But if you look at commodities and gold, they're commonly thought to be risky, and they are. Commodities are wild. Gold and silver can be very wild, but as everyone's learned, so can stocks. The technology stocks, technology sector, as you know, probably down 90% from 2000 to 2002, if you measure it by the performance of the tech-heavy NASDAQ 100 index. And then, of course, there's the crash of 08 and 09. Actually, it started in 07 with the unraveling of the credit markets, you might remember. But the stock crash was basically 08 and 09. Stocks, too, are volatile. And so can bonds be volatile. Now, since the crash, government bonds have done well, even though they've ratcheted down a little bit, meaning yields or interest rates have risen a little bit in treasuries, long-term treasuries, but they can be wild. I've been doing this as a licensed professional for 28 years, and that takes me back to the early 80s when the bond market was wild, coming off the inflationary 70s. And in fact, in the 70s, the economy and the markets were recovering from the U.S. having dropped the gold standard in 1971, and there were all kinds of repercussions and cross currents from that throughout the 70s. And then in the 80s, some of that had to be unwound. So when inflation ended, at least the severe inflation of the late 70s, then we saw bond prices get wild again, and it was all the way into the mid-80s when we were still seeing bond prices very volatile and yields were very high. So all asset classes, stocks, bonds, commodities, can be volatile, and the key to wealth building is to know the right mix that's right for you in a diversified portfolio. And to take that a second step further, and that is to flex, to adapt to the environment. And by the environment, I mean one that changed drastically with the crash. It ended decades of boom and ended the old school of thought, the old way of investing, where you just traditionally rely on an asset, a diversified portfolio across several asset classes. And then many advisors and investors would just forget about it. Allocate the client or allocate yourself across three asset classes, let's say, and then forget about it. That doesn't work. As the crash proved, and as could be proven again, instead, active management is really the way to go, because you have to take that asset allocation and be willing to change it when the market environment changes, because the changes in today's economy and today's financial market are so radical that you can't just write it out. You can't just take a strategy and just write it out. It could be years or even decades before a particular asset class or market comes back. For example, if the Dow makes it back to 14,164, its record high is set in 2007, still over 2,000 points away. When will that be? If it's this year or next year, it will still be 12 years after the constant dollar top in the stock market in 2000 and 4 to 5 years after the top in 2007 before the crash, and you will just then be getting even. Getting even may seem nice to a lot of people after the crash, but you don't want to do that as a long-term strategy. You don't want to just hang around in an investment or investments and wait for them to get you back to even, or you'll spend your life or career trying to get back to even. That's not the thing to do. So that's why I'm saying take it a second step. take the asset allocation in your portfolio and have a disciplined method, a way to flex, to adapt, to change that asset allocation depending on what the markets do. Now, we do that at Ascani Wealth Management by closely monitoring our models, most of which are proprietary, but they are designed to extract information from the markets and help us make the decisions as to when the stock market's in trouble, when it's not, when the dust has settled, and what to do, what interest rates will likely do. Those are according to our models, and that's the second step toward long-term wealth building. If you'd like more information, we'd like to be a part of your investment decision-making input. Give me a call, 877-578-5788. That's 877-578-5788. Toll free or go to defendingyourmoney.com. This is Dan Ascani. I'll see you tomorrow at 5.
Thanks for listening to Defending Your Money with your host, Dan Ascani of Ascani Wealth Management, located in the Golden Bear Plaza in North Palm Beach. Now it's time for you to take action. Give Dan a call and set up your free consultation, 877-578-5788. That's toll free, 877-578-5788. Or check out the website at www.ascaniwm.com. That's ASCANIWM.com. And join us every day at this same time for Defending Your Money with your host, Dan Ascani, on AM 740 WSBR, South Florida's Money Talk Radio.
The opinion expressed in this sponsored program is strictly related to post-case and callers and not necessarily those of restrictions, staff members, and their sponsors.
Does it scare you to know that bed bugs are real or that termites cause billions of dollars in property damage? Does it frighten you to know that cockroaches contribute to asthma? Well, it shouldn't. What should really scare you is not knowing these things, because knowing about household pest threats is the best way to prevent them, and it's a lot less scary than the prospect of learning about them the hard way. This message brought to you by the National Pest Management Association. Learn more at pestworld.org.
The opinions expressed on the following sponsored program are strictly related to host, guests, and callers and are not necessarily those of the station, staff, management, or sponsors.
This is Capital Concepts with Jeff Shuler, brought to you by Liberty International Financial Services. This radio show is a no-holds-barred, no-nonsense breakdown of every area of the financial market. Liberty International is committed to helping you to protect and grow your assets. If you have questions about the broadcast, call 954-202-9491 or go online to www.lifs.info. And now, here's Jeff Shuler.
Hey, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Capital Concepts. I'm Jeff Shuler. Hope you all had a wonderful, wonderful Christmas and an absolutely fantastic celebration of the new year. The last year, the last week of the year was nothing short of stunning for some metals, as silver got past $30 an ounce, held there. Gold up over $1,400, held there. Palladium made a run at $800, held there for a while. And to start off the new year, we had a pretty good day. Up until about halfway through, we saw the Dow Jones Industrial Index up 93.25, closing at 11,670.75. NASDAQ was up 38.65 at 96.91.52. S&P up 14.23 at 12.71.87. Nikkei Tokyo is down 115.62 at 10,278.92. Now, gold closed, actually all metals closed down a little bit today. Gold is off $7 at 14.14.60, got as high as 14.24. Silver closed at $30.67, down 24 cents of the day, hit 31.22. Palladium, which got as high as $812, closed at $790, was down 10 bucks for the day, and platinum was off 3 at 17.66 after hitting a high of 17.93. Oil gained a dime to close at 91.48. The dollar was up 0.22 at 79.19. It was up against the euro, the renminbi, and the yen. It was down against pretty much everything else. So, if you listened to the show last week, you got a pretty good idea of where I think things are going to go from here. Let's check in with some other people. An interesting comment, and I'll give this interesting. Dennis Gartman, who is the founder of the Gardner Letter, said, "We are not going to see a decline in the unemployment rates in the U.S. for quite some time. But despite the news, you see more people going into shops, you see airplanes incredibly crowded, and even the housing market seems to be doing a bit better. He thinks we're going to have a good year." Dennis, the housing market is doing a bit better? We'll talk about that in a sec. Actually, the Case-Shiller report came out on the 28th, and I'm just going to give you a little bit of an excerpt from it. Here's a quote. "The double dip is almost here as six cities set new lows for a period in the since the 2006 peaks. There's no good news in the report. Home prices across the country continue to fall." That's David M. Blitzer, chairman of the Index Committee at Standard & Poor's. "The trends we have seen over the past few months have not changed. The tax incentives are over, and the national economy remained lackluster in the month covered by the data. Existing home sales and housing starts have been reported for both October and November, and neither is giving any sense of optimism. On a year-over-year basis, sales are down more than 25%, and the month's supply of unsold homes is about 50% above where it was during the same month a year ago. Housing starts are still hovering near 30-year lows. Delinquency rates saw a little bit of improvement, but that was relative. And they're also well above their historic average, both for prime and subprime. All 20 MSAs and both composites were down in October over December." Dennis, where do you see anything in the housing market that is good? Because I tell you, buddy, nobody else sees it, not one. As a matter of fact, Mort Zuckerman, chairman and CEO of Boston Properties, said home prices will continue to climb for several years. "I'm pessimistic about residential real estate," said Zuckerman. The firm specializes in high-end commercial real estate and last week bought the iconic John Hancock Tower in Boston's Back Bay for $930 million. He's the chairman and editor-in-chief of the weekly news magazine, U.S. News & World Report, and publisher of the New York Daily News. Blamed the continuing price decline in so-called shadow inventory of foreclosed homes that are yet to come to the market. "That's going to put downward pressure on residential prices. In my judgment, it's going to continue for several years. We've seen home prices go down now for 4 months in a row," again citing the Case-Shiller Index, which I just went over, "by 1.3% in the last month. Since it's an accelerating downward trend in those prices, it's on top of 3 to 4 years of declines." Again, I talk about housing because housing, look, our economy has two main components to it that you can use to really gauge the strength of the economy: the housing market and employment. Both will give you a very good indication of what other things will happen. The housing market is going to tell you the real strength of the financial services industry. It will tell you about the affordability that Americans have, consumers have. U.S. foreclosures jump in the third quarter.
Yeah.
U.S. home foreclosures jumped in the third quarter, and banks' efforts to keep borrowers in their homes dropped as the housing market continued to struggle. The regulator said one reason for the increase in foreclosures with the banks have exhausted options for keeping many delinquent borrowers in their homes through programs such as loan modifications. Newly initiated foreclosures increased to 382,000 in the quarter. That's a 31% jump over the previous quarter. And what's stunning, it's a 3.7% rise from a year ago. So if you think it can get any worse than it was a year ago, yeah, it's worse. The number of foreclosures in process increased to 1.2 million, a 10% increase from a year ago. It's not getting better. So all the people in the shops, people that are buying clothes for the holidays, where's the money coming from? Especially if so many of them are unemployed. You got it. It's money that otherwise is spending on their mortgage. For housing recover, according to Diana Olnick, comes down to confidence. You know, comes down to employment as well. Now, one thing that I'm bullish on as far as price goes, but it's very definitely bearish for our economy, is the price of oil. We're already seeing at the pump. You've seen it. I've seen it. I'm paying, what, $3.10, $3.15 for a gallon of gas. U.S. crude oil futures ended today higher. On the first trading day of the year, U.S. manufacturing numbers came out, European data came out, cold weather forecasts, higher energy demand. U.S. light sweet crude for February delivery up 17 cents to $91.55 a barrel, the highest close since October 3rd, 2008. What does that do, though? It's inflationary. The one item that affects all others, the one commodity that affects all others is oil. The higher price of oil, the higher price of energy. The higher price of energy, the higher price of everything. Because manufacturing costs go up, transportation costs go up, and you and I, our monthly discretionary disposable income goes down. OPEC said they're not going to stand in the way of $100 oil. Now, Saudi Arabia preferred $70 to $80 a barrel. But they said, hey, yeah, $100 a barrel is okay. We don't mind. We're not going to hold. We're not going to turn the pumps up. Uh-uh. They don't care. OPEC Secretary General Abdullah Al-Badri said if it goes to $100 due to speculation, OPEC will not move. He said the organization didn't want oil to rise that far. Please. Now, I don't think it's going to go to the $125 to $150 a barrel that some people are saying. Can it? Yes. Will it? I don't think so. I don't think there is that much demand, but $110, $115, yeah. Yeah, so could speculators push it up to the $125 level, maybe higher? Of course. Now, back when it ran to $147, it had no business going to $147. That's why it dropped back to $50. It was a speculator's bubble. But guess what? Speculators' bubbles, while they end up bursting, go up an awful lot in the first place. It doesn't make it right, but it is what it is. So you can poo-poo, you can say it doesn't deserve it, but hey, it can happen a lot easier than it not happening. The problem is that it has a dampening effect on the economy. Bank of America lost a key battle last year at the end of the year, and then I get a chance to report on this, in its mortgage fraud fight. New York court ruled just before Christmas that bond insurer claiming Bank of America's countrywide unit fraudulently induced it to insure $21 billion of mortgage-backed securities can use statistical sampling to prove its case. Now, most of us don't understand that, but let's put it this way. It's not good for Bank of America. Now, they did eliminate some what's called put-back risk. Bank of America shares actually went up today as the bank cut a deal with Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac that resolved a dispute over misrepresentations made about the quality of mortgages purchased by the government-sponsored enterprises. Now, the settlement ends the protracted process by which GSEs were challenging Bank of America on security-by-security basis. Let investors know the total liability of Bank of America with regard to this issue. But the settlement today does nothing, maybe just a very little bit, to deal with a liability that could far exceed this settlement with the GSEs. And that's called the private putback of mortgage securities by their holders to Bank of America. Some may take the settlement as a sign that Bank of America is more open to reaching a settlement with holders of private securitizations. So it's already cost Bank of America, I think I saw it was like $2.9 billion, right? $3 billion. That's their settlement. Ouch. There's a lot more to it. Bond prices fell after the manufacturing report. Economic optimism, which, again, see, to me is a little bit silly. But they paired some of their early losses today U.S. manufacturing data disappointed by only meeting rather than beating expectations. Volumes were below average, however, as traders returned from holidays. It's going to be interesting to see how the treasuries trade this week. But that a 10-year treasury up to 3.33%. Last month, it was 2.8, 2.7, 2.6, 2.5. 3.33%. I tell you what, if you see oil going north in price, that's going to doom bondholders. Can it be bullish for the stock market? Yes, because if hedge funds, if large funds, large investment funds, change their asset allocation, even 1%, moving 1% out of bonds into stocks, it'll help rally stocks. Nothing to do with valuations, but if they see risk, higher risk, lower reward in bonds, they'll move out within the stocks. You'll see a rally there. We'll talk about debt, the Muni meltdown, and what's going to go on with the price of metals when we get back from the break.
Metal prices are climbing, and with the substantial amount of global debt, many are expecting gold and palladium to continue increasing in price for the foreseeable future. The experts at Liberty International Financial Services want to educate you on how to invest in all four precious metals, gold, silver, platinum, and palladium. In today's trying times, it's imperative that investors know the rules of the game. If you'd like to speak to one of the Liberty International Financial experts regarding investing in precious metals, please call 954-202-9491. That's 954-202-9491. And join us right here on AM 740 WSBR, South Florida's Money Talk Radio, to listen to Capital Concepts with Jeff Shuler weekdays at 7 a.m. and again at 5:30 p.m. You can also listen via the Internet at WSBRradio.com. Again, for information regarding investing in precious metals, call 954-202-9491. That's 954-202-9491. Liberty International Financial Services, delivering beyond expectations. You are listening to Capital Concepts with Jeff Shuler, brought to you by Liberty International Financial Services, your source for the whole truth about the financial market. If you have questions about the podcast, call 954-202-9491. That's 954-202-9491. Or go online to www.lifs.info. Now, once again, here's Jeff Shuler.
One of the things that seems to be forgotten, if it's not out in front of people's noses every day, it seems to be forgotten, this is a massive amount of debt that we have. And it seems that every other day, something pops up that's catastrophic debt-wise. Now, one, we've got the Muni meltdown. America is now officially worried about municipal bond meltdown in a piece calling Day of Reckoning, 60 Minutes did a showcase. Merrick Whitney's bold prediction was to 1,500 sizable munis default. So you got the munis. We know they're in tough shape. But there's another $1 trillion in debt sitting out there that's even more nefarious than the munis. And it's not you and I. It's not our credit cards. How's that? It's these students. Students, I tell you. Yeah. Sitting in the kitchen of a San Francisco apartment, Kyle McCarthy could not hold back his tears. I know I have to pay him. I know, and I will. I never said I wouldn't, you know? He has no idea how. He's 28. This guy's got a master's degree. And he says he's got about $72,000 in student debt. Where does he work? Borders Bookstore. And that barely pays him enough to meet his rent. He said, I tried to work out anything with them, you know? Like I can pay back this money. I can pay you $50 a month. And it was no. You need to pay the full amount now, or we're just going to take it out of your paycheck. Because this is the government. And like the IRS, they don't mess around. Now he's bracing for possible eviction. He lives in fear the creditors are going to go after his mom in Maryland. So he can't get out. Now, this is not extreme, and it's not rare. It's all over the place. It's a recent estimate, very recent. Based upon the current increase in student debt, get this, FinAid.org has a student loan debt clock. It says, America's student loan debt is growing at a rate of $2,853.88 per second. It'll reach and surpass $1 trillion by next year. As a matter of fact, the rate that it's going up is only increasing. The scary part is, that's only based upon public schools. There are no numbers that have come out of the private schools. They won't say. So that's only part of it. And it's getting worse. Who's going to fill that? Who's going to foot that bill? You and I. So where does that lead us? We've got credit card debt at all-time high. We've got mortgage debt at all-time high. We've got corporate debt at all-time high. We've got the U.S. jet at all-time high. Munis are getting ready to fail. And now we've got the biggie, the White House, the $14.3 trillion debt ceiling. A top aide to Barack Obama warned catastrophic consequences if Republicans follow through on threats to reject and increase the nation's borrowing limit. Republicans who take control of the House this week are demanding spending cuts to curb the $1.3 trillion budget deficit. And several said they would oppose a higher debt ceiling if Obama does not agree to a range of painful cuts. White House economic advisor Austin Goolsbee accused Republicans of playing chicken with the nation's financial credibility. This is not a game, you know. The debt ceiling is not something to toy with, Goolsbee told CNBC. If we hit the debt ceiling, that's essentially defaulting our obligations, which is totally unprecedented in U.S. history. Mr. Goolsbee, we've raised this debt ceiling before. It means we've technically defaulted on our debt before. It's not unprecedented. I said many times last year that the government's take isn't going down. The government's take is going up. But their spending goes up faster than their income. And they don't even have to cut. All they have to do is stop increasing. And eventually we'll catch up. And see, that's what they're talking about here. The Republicans aren't talking about cutting the actual current spending. What they're saying is cut the increases, lower the increases, or stop the increases. That'll hold it under the current debt limit. Now, if you're going to have a debt limit, have a debt limit. Stick to it. You want to have a lack of credibility? Go against it. Just okay. We're at the four. Hey, we got to the 14.3 trillion. We're going to change it to 15 trillion now. Oh, but we'll stay under that, right? Debt upon debt upon debt. Lindsey Graham. To not raise the debt ceiling could be a default on the of the U.S. states on bond and treasury obligations. Now, that's if we don't pay our bills. That would be very bad for the position of the United States and the world at large. Well, yeah, of course. Look, no one's saying don't pay the debt. No one's saying don't service the interest on our debt. What they're saying is cut the nonsense out. Have some sense of fiscal responsibility. I know in the era of multi-trillion-dollar deficits, the term fiscal responsibility is something foreign. that doesn't exist anywhere. Not on this planet right now. Maybe in Greece now, and look what's happening over there. Would curtailing government spending cause us to go into a deep recession? No, because the government, it's not a big enough piece of the pie. Not here. Other small countries, maybe. Not here. Not with our economy. 2010 to me was a year of smoke and mirrors. Boy, I tell you what, they did a good job with it. They really convinced people. They push money in the right places. They cause certain indices to move because of it. They inflate certain indices up. And all of a sudden, everything is rosy again. But yet we still have 10% unemployment. We still have record levels of foreclosed properties with no end in sight. We still have banks unaccountable when it comes to posting and marking to market the true value of their assets. Gold tells the truth, ladies and gentlemen. $1,414 an ounce. Silver, $30.57 an ounce. I've heard some wild numbers.